we'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
It's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll head out on the road with Mysterious Traveler and Fire in the Sky from 1951. But first, on the lighter side, let's enjoy the Red Skelton Show. Born the son of circus clowns in July of 1913, Skelton started his show business career at the age of 10, and by 1928 had broken into burlesque. Skelton's appearances on the Rudy Valley Show in the mid-1930s led to several encores. His main interest, of course, was in movies and vaudeville until October of 1941. When the program went on in 1941, Ozzie Nelson's band provided the music. Skelton dropped out of radio soon after his draft notice arrived from the Army in March of 1944. By the time he returned to NBC in December of 1945 following his military discharge, Ozzie and Harriet were going strong in their own comedy show. His Tuesday night slot for Rally continuing until 1948 when he moved to Fridays for Tide. Skelton's final season, 1952-53, found him in his original slot, Tuesday nights on NBC. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Red Skelton program from October of 1948. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do.
Skelton's back and Friday got him.
From Hollywood, Procter & Gamble brings you the Red Skelton Show, starring Red Skelton, Dave Rose and his orchestra, our singing stars, the Four Knights, Verna Felton, Lorene Tuttle, Pat McGee, and yours truly, Rod O'Connor. Yes, it's the Red Skelton Show, brought to you by Tide. And now, from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the star of our show, Red Skelton.
Thank you very much, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, Rod, how was your trip to Texas with Art Linkletter last Tuesday?
It was wonderful. Say, you look happy tonight.
Yeah, I am. I invested $500 and got me a new used car.
Now, what can you get for $500?
A Rookin. Okay, I drove the thing up the alley to park it in the garage, and one ash can nudged the other and says, look, there's one with wheels. Quite a car, though. Quite a car.
I've got to see it.
Well, it's stacked up outside here. Thing so old, when I got licensed, I had to get upper and lower plate. Here we go. It's a big black one you can lay down in the back, you know.
Is it a convertible?
Huh?
Is it a convertible?
Oh, yeah, I can always get my money back.
I mean, does the top go up and down?
All the time. All the time. I like it because it's so affectionate, you know.
Affectionate?
Yeah, you see, there's no brakes on it. When you come to a stop street, you should see how it snuggles up to the other car.
Well, how's the pickup?
Well, it's much better than walking, but you'd get there much quicker if you did. Well, I'm sorry I said that, brother. Please laugh quicker. The lights are fading my skin. No kidding. The car is so bad that you got to throw it in second to get over a pedestrian. I don't think of something.
Yeah. How is it on mileage?
Well, it's not too good, but I don't worry about the gas. I've got a Skelton credit card.
Oh, you mean a siphon hose and a 5-gallon
Read
can?
Read your own lines. No, not a siphon can. Hose and a can. I got a shovel and a bucket. It burns coal, you know.
Well, what kind of a car is it?
I think it's a Lincoln, the beard showing through the upholstery.
Well, I still can't figure out why you let anyone sell you a car like that.
Well, what do you mean? It's a good car. Only one thing I'm worried about, I can't get tires for a 19-8 car, you know.
Well, are the tires bad, too?
Well, yeah, I'm practically flat on my rims.
Well, what are you going to do about tires?
Well, I tried tying tennis shoes on the back wheel.
Yeah. Didn't it work?
Yeah, but when I drive home late at night, it gives me the feeling somebody's following me. Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is radio's newest sensation from the acclaim from the critics, that is. They're going to sing the Darktown Stutter's Ball, the Four Nights.
I'll be down to get you in a taxi, honey. You better be ready about 8:30. Come on, baby, now don't be late. I want to be there when the band starts swinging. Just remember when we get there, honey, two steps, we're going to have them all. Dance with both my shoes when they play the Jelly Roll Blues. That's tomorrow night at the Darktown Strutters Ball. Let me tell you, baby, I'll be down to get you in a taxi, honey. Be ready about 8:30. Oh, baby, don't be late. I wanna be there swinging when the band starts jumping. Just remember when we get there, honey. Two steps, we gonna have them all. Dance out both of my shoes. The band play the Jelly Roll Blues. Tomorrow night at the Darktown Stutter.
I'll be down. We got to get you in a wheelbarrow, honey.
Why?
Taxi cab costs too much money.
Yes.
Oh, baby, don't be late. I wanna be there swinging when the band starts jumping. Just remember when we get there, honey, two steps, we're going to have them all.
That's out both my shoes
when they play the Jelly Roll Blues.
Oh, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Yes, tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
Oh, tomorrow night at the Darktown Stutter's Ball.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the story of a man who hates speeches at a banquet.
Hey, taxi, taxi!
Well, Willie Longhorn, tell me, is the banquet over?
What?
Is the banquet over?
It is for me. They found me drinking out of the wrong punch bowl. I didn't know there was anything wrong until I saw the goldfish high and dry. Hey, drive me home, will you, cabby? You go around.
Sure. Why are you leaving so early, Willie?
Well, I don't like those long, drawn-out speeches, you know.
Yeah, I sympathize with you.
Yeah?
Some of those guys are windy old birds, all right.
Now, you ain't kidding. Did you know that I went to a banquet once? And a guy got up and made a speech why Hoover should be reelected, and before he finished, Roosevelt was in for the third term.
What happened tonight?
Well, at first I got in a little trouble with the chair lady, you know, the woman chairman there, you know. She couldn't quiet the crowd down. I tried to help her.
Quiet, quiet. Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Please, may I have your attention?
Oh, shut up, everybody! Can't you see this old dame wants to make a speech? Now, will the guy please hand over her teeth, the one that got him?
Maybe the microphone isn't on.
Well, here, let me test it. Here, testing, testing. Oh. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, Jack, Queen, King. Hello, hello. It's on. I don't know. They're a bunch of rude people. I'll quiet them down. Hand me that bottle of champagne there. That did it. I want to make a little speech myself. Gentlemen and ladies.
Oh, please, Mr. Lumplump, address the meeting correctly. It's ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah?
Certainly. Ladies are always before gentlemen.
On what bus?
Mr. Lumplump, please sit down. You're a disgrace to this gathering.
Well, so what? I got something important to say. Something real important.
Well, what is it?
Hmm?
What is it?
Oh, wouldn't you like to know?
Well, do you have an announcement or not?
Yeah, I got it written down here on this tablecloth. I'll just have to
take
it.
Oh, no, don't pull that tablecloth. You'll smash all those dishes.
Oh, no, I won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
Oh, no, I won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
Well, I hate to admit it, but you're right.
Give me that microphone.
Oh, don't strain at your choker, will you? All right, two characters, I have an announcement to make. Due to the fact that Monday comes on Tuesday, this Wednesday, our regular Thursday meeting will be held on Friday to Saturday because Sunday's a holiday and I can't.
Was anybody there making the political speech?
Yeah, there was one big bloke, and that's when we broke it up. He wasn't very well liked here.
Senator, do you remember me?
Oh, let me see. Could you give me a little hint? Could you give me a hint?
I was your first wife.
Oh, how stupid of me.
How stupid of me.
Yeah. How are you, my dear? How's your mother?
My mother. You know about my mother?
Oh, of course. She's still living with me. When you sued for separate maintenance, you got the house, I got the custody of your mother, remember?
How come you got into politics?
Well, it happened during the Depression. It was either go to work or into politics. You know me, I take the hard way.
Did you know this? I'm wearing your campaign button.
Well, lift your head, your chin's covering it a little there.
Are you insinuating that I have a double chin?
Oh, no, my dear, you'd only have one chin. It just unfolded on you, Zong.
Oh, before you start your speech, can I get you anything?
Yeah, put some water on the table, will you?
You mean to drink?
No, I'm going to stop every 15 minutes and rinse out a few things. Will you hurry up and announce me? I got to catch a train. I got to get back to Washington.
My, you must be an important man these days.
Well, the investigating committee thinks so.
Are you on it?
No, they're on me.
Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. I now give you a man you have all been waiting to meet.
Yeah, up a dark alley somewhere.
A man you have heard a lot about.
Yeah, but tell him it's all lies. I'll explain everything in the investigation.
I give you Senator Blowhard.
Well, won't somebody join me? My friend, before I make my speech, I'd like to say a few words. If I'm elected, I want you to know I'll be one of the best politicians that money can buy. I intend to conduct my campaign a little different. I don't intend to stand here and throw mud at my opponents. He's a fine man. A mighty fine man. Only thing I can't understand is why he runs around with other women and neglects his children so. I got something to say, folks, and I'm going to say it too, just as soon as I find it here. I got it here. I'm delighted to be here in your beautiful city. Where visitors are greeted with outstretched arms.
Ah, drop dead, you bum.
A city that welcomes strangers.
Get out of town, sourpuss. You're curdling the cream of our society.
Tourists.
Hurry up and finish so we can fumigate.
All I ask you to do is to use your right to vote. And if you vote for me, I hope you use it 4 or 5 times if you care.
Before we start paying our exterminator overtime.
You taxpayers. I'm here to tell you about our party's platform. In fact, I may be here for a few weeks. Ooh. But I doubt it.
Let's hear about your platform.
I'm for labor. I'm for capital. I'm for the middle classes. And above all, I'm for Mother's Day. Yes, sir, you put me in office and I'll put a mother in every garage. Prosperities will be everybody's. Not only will one night be Saturday night, but every night Saturday night. That's without bad. Not only will a few with money be able to paint the town red, but all of us paint the town red.
I got news for you, Doc. The few things that are painting the town red now ain't got a chance because too many of us like the white and blue paint that goes with it.
Here, hey, here. You big ham. Here's something to go with you.
Who threw that egg?
Please, I think you'd better sit down, Mr. Blowhard. They're throwing things.
No, sir. I've got freedom of speech over here. Joe said I was to use it, too. Yes, sir, and I'll use it by all the power that's infected it, injected in me.
Here, take that. And that.
Here, stop that. Please, friends, if you're going to throw eggs, take them out of the chickens first.
And now David Rose and his Procter & Gamble Orchestra will play Sunrise Serenade.
Thank you, Dave Rose.
A page from the Mean Little Kid's Diary.
Have you ever tried to keep a secret from a youngster? Well, it's almost impossible. And sometimes it can be embarrassing, too, especially if it's Junior, the mean little kid.
Loreen, dear, you'd better hurry or you'll be late for work.
Oh, I dread going to work today, Mother. It's the beginning of the store's big fall sale. Oh, where's Junior? Junior!
Yes, kiddo!
Come kiss Mother goodbye. I'm going to work
now. Okay, okay. Okay, pucker up.
Mm. Oh, goodness, you smeared my lips.
Well, look, you smeared me chocolate frosting, too.
Oh, look at my face.
Boy, you
got chocolate from ear to ear. Mother, why do you let him lick your frosting bowl so early in the morning?
I didn't let him lick the bowl. In fact, my frosting isn't done yet. Oh, I got a newsflash, kiddo. It's done and gone.
We'll discuss that later, Junior.
Okay.
Oh, now you look all right, dear. Hurry or you'll miss the bus.
Oh, you'll miss your bus.
Good night, dear.
Bye,
Junior,
dear.
And I will probably see you this afternoon.
Yes. Oh, no, Mother, please. You must not bring Junior to my department.
But why?
Yeah, why?
It's a new rule at the store. No salesperson who has a youngster is permitted to work there.
No kidding.
It's a part of their new juvenile delinquency program.
They don't get help.
And if Mr. Fishplace, the manager, finds out that I have a C-H-I-L-D, it's curtains.
C-H-I-L-D, huh? So that's how you spell brat, huh?
Oh, there's my bus. Goodbye.
Goodbye, goodbye. Watch out for me, roller skate. Get up, get up. But look at her sitting there talking to a roller skate. Get up. Run, you miss the bus.
Hurry,
run.
Hurry, you miss the bus.
Hurry.
Hurry. Let me... Did she make it?
Her head did. The rat number's running along the side of the bus there.
What? Oh, Junior, why do you frighten me? She got on the bus.
I know. I just like to see your eyeballs pop out, John. Oh, boy, how mothers brood over their widow broods, you know.
Come on. Let's get cleaned up, Junior. Now, take you shopping with me.
Oh? You going to take your money with you, or are you going to wear the coat with the loose sleeves again?
Junior, don't talk about me as if I were a shoplifter. Now, let's get to the store before the best things are all picked
okay,
over.
Okay, yeah.
Junior, where are you? Oh, if you don't watch him, every second he disappears.
Could I help you, madam? I'm the store detective.
Oh, yes, please. I've lost my little grandson.
He couldn't by any chance be in one of your loose sleeves.
No.
Well, don't worry, madam. I'll find him. I'll have him back with you inside of 10 minutes.
Couldn't you make it 20? I'll go with you.
Oh, good. Now, where should we start looking for him?
Well, let's go down this aisle here, where all the people are rubbing their shins. He'll be around there someplace.
Now, wait, the elevator's just coming down. I'll ride up to the lost and found department and see if they know anything about it.
All right.
Boy, I never had so much fun with a hat pin in all my life.
That must be him. Come with me, son.
Yeah, not so fast, fat boy. Not so fast. Boy, my mummy told me never to go with strangers who offered me candy.
Not offering you any candy.
You will when I put the pressure on you.
I've got him, lady. Little boy, don't you know it's dangerous to carry a hatpin around like that?
I know, but nobody crowded me when I was on the elevator, boy.
Junior!
Hey, Nemo, you found me just in time. This big blimp was trying to kidnap me.
He's the star detective.
Oh, a detective. Well, in that case, I'll just kick him in the shin.
Oh, no. What did you do that for? Suppose I was the four walker, what would you have done?
The same thing. I got a one-track mind.
Junior, stop that.
You couldn't.
Stop that. What have I told you about kicking people with your new shoes on? Thank you, officer, for helping me.
Yes.
It's quite all right.
Quite all right.
Well, goodbye, little boy.
Hello.
Let me know when you rob your first bank.
Yes.
Junior, did you have to kick that nice man in the shins?
Yes.
Why?
The short legs couldn't reach any higher.
Well, from now on, you stay with me.
Okay, I stay with you.
Oh, look. They're having a sale on slacks.
Well, wait for me. Wait. Now, where did she go through the people? I can't see. What does she want with slacks anyhow? They won't look good on her. She ain't fat enough to wear them. Now, what can I do with me little self here all alone? Oh, well, look. There's the notion counter. I'll just go over. Maybe I'll get a notion. I'm going to do the notion. Well, look who's behind the counter. Me mummy. I better pretend I don't know her or she'll lose her job. Oh, lady.
Yes, little boy. Junior!
What the hell is that, me? Oh. Please, don't get so familiar with your customers, please.
Now, I told your grandmother not to bring you here.
Why, don't you love me anymore, Mommy?
Of course I love you, Junior.
No, you don't. You don't want me around because you don't love me anymore.
Yes, I do, darling.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. But you see, the store has a rule.
No rule.
And if I want to keep my job, nobody must know that you're my child.
You just don't love it. How much is it worth to you for me to keep my mouth shut?
Now, look, you can't bribe me. Huh? And you just wait until I get you home.
Here, now, don't you...
Oh, dear!
What's the matter? What's wrong?
Here comes the store manager, Mr. Fishplace.
Oh, oh.
Oh, here, Junior, here's a dollar. Pretend you don't know me.
Oh, I wouldn't take you money. I was only fooling, Mummy.
Then give that dollar back.
I ain't that much of a fool.
Anything wrong, Doreen?
No, no, Mr. Fishplace, no? Nothing at all. I was just waiting on this nice little boy.
Yes.
Oh, my, my. You are a fine young man. Where's your mother?
Out looking for the stork with a shotgun. Should I tell him where my mother is?
No. Mr. Fishplace, I happen to know that this little boy came here with his grandmother.
Yes.
Oh, in that case, where is your grandmother?
She's in the book department.
Oh, she's literary.
No, she's a bookie.
Junior.
Bone to finish Felton, they calls her.
Would you care to lay a couple of bucks on some pig in the third at Pimlico? Sardine boy?
His name is Fishface.
Huh?
Fishface!
Well, I'm not here to strike up new friendships. I want to buy something.
Doreen, will you take care of the little boy?
I certainly will.
He don't mean that way. He don't mean that way.
Very well. Little boy, what is it you want?
I'd like to buy something for me, mummy.
Oh, now that's sweet.
Yeah.
What, for instance?
Oh, maybe some bobby socks with some bobby pins to hold them up with.
Well, what size stocking does your mother wear?
Well, does you have anything that'll fit a ball bat?
What?
Yeah, you just stand a baseball bat on a surfboard and you got the right size, boy.
Just wait till I get you home.
Shh, careful, careful. Old Feast Face is looking. Old Feast Face is looking.
Well, maybe you just better take the bobby pins.
Yes, I'll take the bobby pins. Would you wrap them as a gift, please?
Now, look, this is a little ridiculous.
Oh, it is, huh? You better wrap it as your gift, boy, that bobby pin pack, or this place is going to smell from broken perfume bottles.
Don't touch that stack of bottles. I'll wrap the package of pins.
Good, that's better. On second thought, you better wrap them separately. It's more fun when you get a lot of packages, you know. And on third, I'll take some of that perfume over there. I'll get it right there. I'll get
Will
that
you
for
get
her.
Get out of here.
No, I want that bottle of perfume, the one at the bottom of the stack.
Oh, right? No!
Get the airwick, quick, get the airwick.
What happened over there? Little boy.
What?
I think we'd better find your grandmother.
You don't have to.
I knew it. The minute I heard that crash. Well, Lorene, aren't you going to punish the boy?
Why, madam, why should I?
Well, you're his mother, aren't you?
You're his what?
What have I done?
You let the cat out of the upset apple cart, blabbermouth.
Oh, Doreen, not you lose your job.
You get up off the floor. Somebody might step on you and sprain their ankle.
What's this about you being the boy's mother?
I don't know what he's talking about.
Oh, no. She's never seen this child before.
Mamma, you better hurry and think of something fast because old Feast Snoot here is going to fire her and you'll have to go back to your old job in television as a stand-in for Gorgeous George.
Well, I'm waiting for an answer.
My good man, you don't think this girl could be this boy's mother, do you?
Well, now that you mention it, they do look a lot alike.
Oh, we does we? Well, smarty pants, then which one of us has the Tony?
Thanks for being with us tonight. We hope you liked our program well enough to be with us next week.
From October of 1948, it's been The Red Skelton Show. When we return, The Mysterious Traveler with Fire in the Sky. From August of 1951, As Yesteryear Continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Mysterious Traveler first rode the rails on Mutual in 1943 as a Sunday night sustained program. The series ran on Mutual for 9 years, bowing out in 1952, never having had a sponsor. Maurice Tarplin brought just the right amount of morbid mischief to the Traveler's voice. Like the Whistler, he never appeared in the stories. He simply narrated from on high. The stories ran from wild end-of-the-world science fiction to straight crime. In some ways, the Mysterious Traveler was close to escape in story content as it was to the Whistler. The Traveler's stories flowed from the typewriters of Robert Arthur and David Kogan, who also produced and directed. As with most unsponsored programs, The Mysterious Traveler avoided star players and instead drew its talent from the world of the unsung radio professional. Scores of musicians, announcers, and actors, representing many of the medium's best pros, worked on the program during its 9-year run. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear. The Mysterious Traveler, with Fire in the Sky, from August of 1951. Another classic show from the golden age of radio, here on Yesteryear.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Colvin, and starring three of radio's foremost actors, Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Janney, in Fire in the Sky. This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as we join two young people who find themselves in the strangest situation human beings ever encountered. It's the story I call Fire in the Sky. It's late evening, and a convertible with the top down is driving along a lonely road in the Shenandoah Valley. The driver is young, in his 20s. So is the girl beside him. They're Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Ramsey of New York City, married less than 24 hours and honeymooning. Nick Ramsey is driving slowly, for both he and Sally are watching the great golden disc which is rising in the sky above the hills to the west. Not the moon, but the new comet, which the whole world is talking about with excited interest and some apprehension.
Nick, it's so bright. It's grown much brighter since last night.
Yes, I know. Seems to be about half as big as the moon now. You can almost see it grow.
Looks as if it were coming right at us.
Well, that's just an illusion. It'll pass about 15 million miles away, the radio said.
15 million? Sounds like a lot. But I wish it were more.
Oh, they said it wouldn't do much damage even if it hit us head on. Comets are mostly gas, you know.
Well, it certainly looks solid. It is beautiful, though, isn't it?
Hmm.
I'm glad we decided to drive tonight so we could watch it.
Let's turn on the news and see what the radio says about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try Washington. Danny Dunn has been giving a blow-by-blow account of its approach.
So, everybody everywhere, this is your feature reporter, Danny Dunn, speaking from Washington. Well, the big news tonight is still Comet X, as it's been nicknamed. Tonight, it seems it's going to pass little old Earth a bit closer than was thought. Maybe inside 10 million miles. But it's nothing to worry about. Can't hurt us any. A comet is just gas, you know. Like some congressman here in Washington. Oh, speaking of Washington, the president and his cabinet quietly left town today with their families. We're told they're going to a special government observatory where they can all see Comet X through telescopes. Well, that just shows you how interested everybody is. The rest of the world is standing outdoors tonight, keeping an eye on the sky. After all, this is a spectacle mankind sees only once in 1,000 years, and nobody wants to miss it. Well, folks, the government has asked me to pass along the following to you. Don't be alarmed if Comet X seems to be getting awfully close.
I guess there's nothing new on
it. It's just an optical illusion.
Nick, look up ahead. Somebody's signaling us with a flashlight.
Yeah, it looks like an old codger, one of the local natives, I guess.
Well, do you think we ought to stop? Such a lonely road.
Oh, he probably just wants a lift. Anyway, he's so old he couldn't hurt us any. Hello, you want a lift?
Oh, evening, folks. Mighty glad you come along. I need some help back.
Help?
It's my partner. Rock slide fell on him, crushed his chest in. He's down in the mine. I need help to get him out.
You're a miner?
That's right, ma'am. Name's Jones. Jerry Jones. We got us a mine up this road about a quarter of a mile. Poor Sam hurt himself an hour ago. Been waiting ever since for somebody to come along.
Well, Sally, I guess it's up to us. We can't leave some poor fellow dying and not help.
But, Nick, are you sure?
I'm sure it's all right. Okay, hop in, Mr. Jones. We'll have your partner out just as quick as we can.
Folks, the little shack covers your mind, Chef.
Now, come along, Sally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry we haven't any first aid equipment, Mr. Jones.
I've got some down below. This way, Mr. Ramsey. You have to go down on the lift.
Nick, look how bright it is. The comet seems to be growing bigger by the minute.
Here we are. Step inside, folks. I got the flashlight.
Huh. We've got a regular mine lift in here. Machinery and everything. What kind of mine is this?
It used to be a coal mine. Got abandoned. Me and Sam, we found a little vein of diamonds down in the coal.
Diamonds?
Now, wait a minute. There aren't any diamond mines in this country.
Sure there is. Got some down below. Prove it to you after we fix up, Sam. Please step on lift, Mr. Ramsey.
Nick, I think this is a trick.
So do I. A diamond mine. Listen, Jones, coal and diamonds don't go together, even though they're both carbon. So we're not getting on that lift.
I'm afraid you have to, Mr. Ramsey. Believe me, I'll shoot if you try to get away.
Nick, a gun.
Now listen, put away that revolver. I don't know what kind of crazy scheme this is,
but... It's not crazy. I'm trying to save your lives.
Save our lives?
You see that comet in the sky?
Yes.
They're calling it Comet X. They should be calling it Doomsday.
You are crazy.
That's enough talk. In 14 hours, this Earth and that comet are going to meet, and time is precious. Get on that lift, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, or I'll shoot. Believe me, no harm will come to you if you do just as I say.
Yeah, I guess we'd better do it, Sally. There's no use in arguing with a madman who has a gun.
Well, if you say so, Nick.
Now, that's better. Now, hold on tightly. Don't do anything foolish. If you don't know how to operate this lift, then we have a 1,000-foot drop below us.
We've been going down for so long now.
We're almost at the bottom, Mrs. Ramsey. Please don't be frightened. I'm doing this for your own good.
Say, who are you? You're not a native. You lost your hillbilly accent long ago.
No, I'm not. It was just a crude disguise. My name is Jeremiah Jones, formerly Professor Jones. Now, we've reached bottom. The surface of the Earth is 1,000 feet above us. Now, Mr. Ramsey, if you and your wife try to attack me, you might succeed. But you'd be very foolish. You'll need me to get you out of here again.
Yes, I suppose that's right.
Very well, please walk quietly ahead of me. These old mine shafts are quite level. I'll shine my flashlight ahead and you won't have any difficulty.
I suppose we have to humor you, but why are you doing this? What are you up to?
You won't believe me if I tell you, Mr. and Mrs. Ramsey, that you two are the most important people in the world tonight. So just walk ahead of me and we'll have the explanations later.
How much further is it? All these tunnels are winding and twisting. Nick, I'm completely lost.
Listen, Jones, if that's your name, come to your senses. Take us back to the surface and we'll forget this happened.
Careful, there's a door ahead of you.
Oh, yes.
Push it open and go in.
Well, shine your flashlight inside. We can't see a thing.
You'll find a light switch beside the door. Turn it on.
Nick, he's closed the door.
He's locking us in. Jones! Jones!
Please, Mr. Ramsey. Turn on the light and just wait calmly. I'll be back. I have to go to the surface now to see if I can rescue anyone else.
Jones! Jones! Oh, he's gone.
Nick. Nick, I'm frightened.
No, it'll be all right, Sally. I'm sure it will. Said there was a light switch, didn't he?
Yes.
Let's see if we can find it. It should be here beside the door. Maybe it's higher. Now, I've got it. Good Lord.
Nick, we're in a room. Completely furnished.
Yeah.
Chairs, tables, electric lights. There's even a radio.
Through those archways, I can see a kitchen. Another room. But this place is like a furnished apartment.
1,000 feet underground, with walls of solid rock. And he's locked us in here. But why, Nick, why?
I don't know, Sally. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Nick, what time is it? How long have we been down here?
2 a.m. We've been locked in here nearly 4 hours.
Nick, it's crazy. He's a madman. He must be.
I wonder. If he's mad, there's certainly a method in his madness.
But
look around you. This furniture, a radio, a kitchen. There must be a generator someplace to supply these lights.
That's what I mean. Only a madman would fix up an old abandoned mine like this.
You know, I've just placed his name. Professor Jeremiah Jones.
Who is he?
He's an obscure astronomer who 10 years ago claimed to have discovered a comet no one else could see. And he dropped out of sight.
He seems to have an obsession about comets. He said Comet X should be called Doomsday.
Yes, I know. And I can't help wondering. Let's turn on that radio again. I have a hunch we'll be getting some news soon. Real news.
All right. Nick, how can a radio work way down here underground?
He must have a wire running above to the surface.
It's just music.
Well, let's leave it on. Maybe a bulletin. Mm.
Hello, everybody. This is your special reporter, Danny Dunn, back with a very important bulletin.
Nick,
I've just come from a meeting at the Smithsonian Institute, and I have some last-minute news about our mysterious visitor, Comet X.
He's leading up to something.
Now, folks, I don't want to alarm you. Panic won't help anybody. But it looks as if there may be some danger after all, and it's only common sense to be prepared for it.
Oh, Nick.
It seems Comet X is not holding to the course predicted for it. Its orbit now intersects the Earth. In about 10 hours, the Earth will pass through the glowing heart of the comet.
Just as Professor Jones told
us. But I repeat, there is no cause for undue alarm. I have Mr. Andrew Weatherby, head of the Scientific Bureau, here at the microphone to tell you in person what to expect. Mr. Weatherby.
Nick, give me your hand. I'm frightened.
Yes, this is big if they've got Weatherby himself on the air.
Good evening, everyone. As you all know, a comet is composed largely of glowing gases. Now, just what effect these gases may have when the Earth passes through them, we do not know. But we anticipate they will be so tenuous, they will hardly be noticeable. However, accompanying the comet is a core of tiny particles of rock and iron. Now, these, entering our atmosphere, will cause a spectacular display of shooting stars and may do some damage.
I'll bet.
Accordingly, the government is asking everyone to take the following precautions. Within the next 8 hours, take shelter, underground if possible. Otherwise, in cellars or in air raid shelters. Take with you all the food and water you can manage. Take bedding, warm clothes. And be prepared to stay on the shelter for at least 48 hours. Begin your preparations now. You will receive further instructions by radio. But above all, remain calm.
Well, folks, this is Danny Dunn again. I'll be standing by all night long to bring you the latest. Keep tuned in and don't worry. This will be a great story to tell your grandchildren. So long for now.
Nick, there's something they're not telling us. I'm sure of it. Do you suppose that the
Professor Jones back. Why, Professor?
Oh, Nick, he has two little children with him. Oh, one of them is just a baby. A little girl. Here, give it to me. There, it's all right. He mustn't cry. Everything's all right.
Thank you. Now, if you, Mr. Ramsey, can take this little boy. Fortunately, he's still sleepy.
Yes, let me have him. I've got him. Now, you sit down. You're all in, and there's blood on your coat.
I'm afraid I've been shot.
Oh. I'll put the boy on the couch there. Yes, he's still sleeping soundly. Now, let me look at you. Let me get this coat off. I'm sorry, but it's got to come off. There. Uh-oh, you've lost a lot of blood.
Yes, I know it. Too much, I'm afraid.
You'll have to cut your shirt loose and fix a bandage. Sally, can you help me?
Oh, yes, baby's gone back to sleep. I'll put her down on the couch, too. There. Now, what shall I do, Nick?
I'm going to cut away the shirt. You pull it loose as I cut.
All right.
How did you get shot, Professor, and where did you get those children?
I went out to bring back more people to this shelter. There are no cars on the road. I went to a house a mile or so away. Family and some visitors were out in the lawn. Watching the comet.
That's fine, Sally. Now give me something to wipe away the blood.
Oh, here. My scarf.
I knew if I tried to persuade them, they'd think I was crazy. I saw the children, boy and the girl, asleep in the back room. I stole them. The baby woke up and cried. Somebody shot at me. I got away in the darkness.
Catch him, Nick.
I've got him. Help me ease him into this chair.
All right.
He's passed out from loss of blood. And here we are, stuck down in an old mine 1,000 feet underground with two children that he's taken from their families.
Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, here I am. So you're awake. How are you feeling?
Very weak, I'm afraid. How are the children?
Oh, they're fine. Luckily, they're too young to be scared. Sally's out in the kitchen feeding them. Now, look here, Professor. It's one thing to lure us down here. It's another thing to steal two babies and
bring
them in.
Please, Mr. Ramsey, face the facts. Haven't I convinced you the entire world is in grave danger?
Danger? From what? A few chunks of stone that may be part of a comet? The radio last night admitted some damage might be done.
Some damage? What do the broadcasts say now?
I don't know. We haven't listened.
After we got you into bed last night and took care of the children, Sally and I just fell asleep. Since we woke up, we've been so busy we haven't had a chance to listen.
And turn on the radio now. Let's listen.
Of course. While you were gone, Andrew Weatherby urged everyone to take shelter for a few days.
So, everybody, this is Dan Dunn, sleepy, but still on the job. Well, I guess you won't find anything else on the radio this morning except the comet. It's so bright you can see it blazing away in the morning sky like a baby sun. It's about 4 hours before its path intersects ours.
4 hours?
I repeat again the official advice. Take shelter. Stay undercover for the next few days, but don't panic. Panic is more dangerous than the comet, believe me. I have to admit that a lot of people have unfortunately lost their heads the last few hours. Roads leading out of every city are clogged with refugees trying to get away. A good many people have been killed in the crush of crowds fleeing the cities. We have reports of hundreds of auto accidents, some looting. Fires are burning unchecked in a number of places. Firemen are fleeing with the others. Washington this morning is a deserted city. So many people here have autos, you know, and they were able to get away. All the air raid shelters are full. People in them are being very calm about it. Our news from other places is a bit scanty. Some lines are down. I'll keep bringing you all the bulletins as they come in. Right now, I've got to get a little rest, so this is Den Dunn, signing off temporarily, folks.
Well, are you convinced now, Mr. Ramsey?
Oh, people are losing their heads because they're scared. But that still doesn't say the comet is actually dangerous to the Earth.
Yes, I know. It wouldn't be if it was just an ordinary comet. But it isn't.
Well, what is it then?
Mr. Ramsey, the fiery head of Comet X is radioactive.
Radioactive?
It will envelop the world in a searing bath of atomic fire. In a dozen hours, civilization will have come to an end.
How's the professor, Nick?
Unconscious. His fever is high and he's in a delirium. His pulse is very weak.
If only we could do something for him.
I've done what I could from the medicine chest. In his mind now, he's reliving the time 10 years ago when he first discovered Comet X and predicted that it was radioactive.
He predicted that?
Yes, we had quite a talk while you were busy with the two kids. He was an obscure professor of astronomy in a little college. He found a speck of light wandering around in the sky, identified it as a comet, analyzed it as being radioactive, and predicted that on its next visit it would strike the Earth.
And nobody believed him?
Well, the comet had vanished by then. Everybody thought he'd imagined it. And when he claimed it was radioactive and would destroy civilization, that was too much. He was fired, he had a breakdown, and was an institution for years.
Oh, yes, now I remember. I read something about it years ago. But the war was on it.
And people had other things to think about. Everybody forgot Professor Jones and the comet. You see, the atomic bomb hadn't been developed then, so the idea of an atomic comet was considered plain crazy.
And now it's come true. Oh, Nick.
Yes. Well, let's turn the radio on again and see if Danny Dunn is still broadcasting.
All right. What time is it?
Well, my watch says 8. Must be 8 at night. No way to be sure way down here underground.
Well, everybody, I don't guess there's much more I can see. We're broadcasting from the sub-basement of the building. There's about 6 of us locked in here. I don't know how much longer we can hold out. We haven't had any communication from outside Washington for the last hour. All wires are dead. Can't pick up any other radio broadcasts. Washington's a dead city now. It's a weird sight. We have a television camera hooked up on the roof. Shows all of the big government buildings outlined by a ghostly, greenish light. Luminous gas surrounding the head of Comet X. We're right in the middle of the comet now. Be about 6 hours before it starts to withdraw. Anybody who can hear me, stay underground as long as you possibly can. Don't come out. The radioactivity will be deadly for a long time yet. Listen, it's better. One guess was that our Earth will be poisoned for 20 years to come. In that case, our power seems to be failing. I guess we'll have to sign off now. So long, everybody.
She's gone up the air.
Nick, think of the whole world dead.
Now, wait a minute, darling. There's bound to be millions of people in safe places like we are. Caves, tunnels, old mines.
Yes, but did you hear what he said? The Earth may be poisoned by radioactivity for years.
Mr. Ramsey. Mr. Ramsey.
Yes, Professor?
I'd like some water.
Of course.
I'll bring it. Here you are, Professor Jones.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
My head is clear, but I'm very weak. How long was I unconscious?
Almost 2 days.
2 days? And the comet...
has come and gone.
And the world...
the radio's dead. We can't pick up anything.
The last report from Washington said it was a dead city.
If only they'd listened to me 10 years ago.
Now, you mustn't upset yourself, Professor. You did everything one man could.
Yes, yes. When I was released from that institution last year, I set about fixing up this refuge. I bought the old mine. All by myself, I brought down furnishings, machinery, food. When I tried to get a few people to join me here, they thought I was insane again.
We understand, Professor.
In the end, I had to resort to desperate trickery, which got you here.
And we're very grateful for it, sir.
And I stole 2 children, a boy and a girl. Out of the whole world, you 4 are all saved.
But there must be other people alive somewhere.
Yes, yes, of course, now. By the time the surface of the earth is livable again...
Will it really be 20 years?
Yes, Mrs. Ramsey. Between 15 and 20 years before the human race can once again live on the earth's surface.
But in even 15 years, the people who are still alive now...
Exactly. Some will live. Human race is very tough. But they may be terribly changed. To reestablish civilization, we can only be sure of you 4.
Oh, no.
My dear, you mustn't be dismayed. I've planned carefully. There's everything you'll need for 20 years down in this cavern. Medicine, food, clothing, books, gasoline. You must not go above ground until it is absolutely safe. Then you will find the world changed. Animal life, plant life, it may have been altered greatly by the radioactivity, but it will be safe then.
Professor, you're too weak to talk.
No, no, I must talk now. I haven't much more time.
Of course you have. You're going to get well, Professor. We need you.
I wish I could, but I won't. Now listen. Build for a better world. We seem to have gotten off the track somehow. Maybe nature simply decided to be done with us when she sent that comet. I don't know. But this is a chance to start over again and do better.
Professor. Professor Jones.
Nick. Nick, he's not...
I'm afraid he is. He's dead, darling.
We're left. You and me. Down here 1,000 feet underground. We have to live here. 20 years or more. Oh, no, Nick, no.
Now, you can't give way, Sally. We've got too much to do. Listen.
It's the baby. I've got to go to it.
That's what I mean. We have to take good care of those kids.
Yes, of course, Nick. Of course we do.
And we'll have to give them names. We could call them Adam and Eve, but let's not. Suppose we just call them Johnny and Susie.
Yes, Nick. All right, Susie. I'm coming. I'm coming.
Mysterious traveler again. I wonder if you'd help me check up on something. Would you just step outside and have a look at the sky? There's a speck of light up there, just to the right of the North Star. It wasn't there last night, and I was just wondering if you... Oh, but it couldn't be a comet, of course not. And even if it is, I'm sure we're in no danger. Of course, if you'd like to know the location of a nice deep cave, Oh, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at the same time.
Just heard The Mysterious Traveler with Maurice Tarplin in the title role. Others in our cast were Brett Morrison, Joyce Gordon, and Leon Janney. Original music played by Fred Mendelson. All characters in our story were fictional. And any resemblance to actual persons in name or otherwise was purely coincidental. Phil Tonkin speaking. This program has come to you from New York.
From August of 1951, it's been The Mysterious Traveler with Fire in the Sky. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Join us again next week at the same time, and why not invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our
preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.